So, hello and welcome to the American Marketing Association's Marketing Power Podcast on Marketing Lessons from the Grateful Dead. I'm your host, Nancy Bacala, Director of Online Content for the AMA. We're very excited to welcome our special guest, Brian Halligan, to the program today. Brian is CEO of HubSpot, a marketing software company he co-founded 4 years ago to help businesses transform the way they market their products by getting found on the Internet. Since its founding, HubSpot has already accumulated over 3,000 customers. Brian is author of 2 books, Inbound Marketing, Get Found Using Google, Social Media, and Blogs, which is in its 4th printing and has been translated into 6 languages, and Marketing Lessons from the Grateful Dead, published just recently in July 2010. He is an entrepreneur in residence at MIT, and in his spare time, he sits on a few boards of directors, follows his beloved Red Sox, goes to the gym, and is learning to play guitar. If you want to know what Brian was up to prior to HubSpot, you can check him out on LinkedIn, or you can connect with him on Twitter at @bhalligan. Brian, welcome to the program, and thank you so much for being with us today.
No, thank you for having me. It's a real pleasure.
Great. Well, certainly as a deadhead myself, Marketing Lessons from the Grateful Dead is really just a fun read. And I imagine a real dream job for a marketer who happens to be a loyal fan of the band. You admit to being a true deadhead in the book and having seen the band perform 100 times. Can you talk a little bit about how the concept for this book came about and what the experience was like in putting it together?
Sure. I proudly admit to being a deadhead and seeing over 100 concerts. The way it came about was there was a Grateful Dead symposium at the University of Massachusetts 3 years ago that I went to, and there was a panel run by a guy named Glenn Rifkin, who's a deadhead that writes for the New York Times, about the business of the Grateful Dead, and he had the Dead's old manager on there. It really got my wheels turning. I'm like, boy, Dead, darn, they were marketing geniuses. And then I read this book called Blue Ocean Strategy that I'm sure many of the listeners have read, and as I'm reading through Blue Ocean Strategy, I thought, well, Grateful Dead really do have a Blue Ocean marketing strategy, quite interesting. And then one day I sent a tweet over to my friend David Meerman Scott, who's kind of a fellow marketing guy and a fellow deadhead, saying, why don't we do a webinar on Marketing Lessons from the Grateful Dead? And he said, sure, let's do it. So on April 1st, April Fool's Day, at 4:20 p.m., we did a webinar, and it was very well attended, thousands of people and great feedback. And then we said, you know, why don't we write a book about it? It'd be a lot of fun. And that's how the long, strange trip happened on it.
Right. Well, you know, the subtitle of your book references the Grateful Dead as the most iconic band in history, and I think very few would probably disagree with you. Certainly an important part of what earns them that title seems to be the iconic way they really developed, engaged, and grew their loyal fan base, fondly known as Deadheads. And I'm wondering, given today's focus on engaging customers, particularly via social media, how can brands and companies become iconic in a similar way?
They certainly were. They were very, very smart about how they built the community around their site, pre-Facebook, pre-Twitter, pre-LinkedIn, pre-all this stuff. And what Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn do is they just speed that up. Now, Grateful Dead did a couple of things just spot on right. First, they had a unique product. And it's a very obvious concept, but so many companies have Me Too products that just sound like everybody else. It's one thing to have a Me Too product when you're competing within a small geography, but now that the competitive landscape is the whole world, because the Internet really opens you up to lots of competitors and lots of customers. So it's more important than ever that you be unique. So they really have this unique product. And they were very clever about how they marketed that product. And one of the really clever things they did was they let folks who came to their concerts take their concerts and then freely make copies of those tapes for their friends. And when they made copies of those tapes for their friends, every tape that was made that was played in the dorm room became an advertisement for people to come in and see their concerts, and there was this self-perpetuating thing going on. It's very applicable to businesses today. What businesses should be doing is inbound marketing. What inbound marketing really is creating lots and lots of content, blog content, webinars, ebooks, whatever it be, and each piece of content they create is a magnet for new customers through Google, through links from other sites, and through the blogosphere and social media sphere. So there's a lot learned from old Jerry Garcia today in 2010, it turns out.
You know, they did do a lot of innovative and sort of iconic things, and at the time when, you know, certainly bands weren't doing that. And I'm wondering if you think, was that a deliberate strategy on their part, or was it built into the DNA of the band members themselves? And is that approach to their business applicable to virtually any business today?
Yeah, part of it, well, I mean, if you ask the band members, we got some access to the band members. They certainly did want to make some money along the way. They started the band in the mid-60s. They didn't actually, the money bus didn't run them over until the mid-80s. But many of the decisions they made were very much driven by Jerry Garcia. And during my research for the book, I was surprised at how much influence Jerry had and what a strong presence he was in the band. I always thought he was the leader, but he was a stronger leader than I thought. And a lot of what drove him was he just wanted as many darn people on the planet to enjoy their music as physically possible. So a lot of the decisions they made, a lot of these interesting marketing strategies just fell out of that one core fundamental assumption of, let's just get as many people as possible exposed to this thing and get as many people to enjoy it. And Jerry was not very motivated by money and success. He really was motivated by that. And an example of how he wasn't motivated by money is when they first started playing the Grateful Dead, Jerry had so little money, he was living out of his car, and his main sustenance of food was he would go down to the local fast food store and get the tomato packages for ketchup and make tomato soup from the ketchup packages and hot water. So that's sort of some of how this all got rolling for these guys.
You know, when you look at that, the band, including Jerry, I mean, it was really kind of comprised of a blend of musicians with a unique sort of mix of experience and backgrounds. And one of the interesting things I know you know in your book is that you think that marketing departments would do well to take a cue from that and develop teams of individuals that have an eclectic mix of talents and backgrounds rather than those who come from sort of maybe traditional backgrounds, particularly those who are sort of don't follow the best practice route that has been sort of traditional. I'm wondering, since that seems, you know, certainly a new concept for the marketing industry as a whole, can you expand on that a little bit?
Sure. You hit the nail on the head in terms of the band. Jerry Garcia was sort of a real bluegrass guy, kind of a jug band guy. He started the band with Bob Weir, kind of a rock and roller. Ron McKernan, who was sort of blues, and then Phil Lesh, who was a jazz guy. So they're very eclectic backgrounds with very little experience, and they came together to really create this magic. And I think it's important in marketing departments today, they do something quite similar to that. And when you look in most marketing departments today, the things they're doing today and the people they employ today look a heck of a lot like the things they were doing 5-10 years ago and with the same people they were doing it with 5-10 years ago. And the marketing industry is going through this massive transformation today where, you know, it used to be that marketers were all about, how do I advertise my way into people's lives? How do I do a TV ad or radio ad? How do we do email? How do I do email blasts and get people's attention that way? How do I do cold calls and get people's attention? None of that stuff that we all grew up with in marketing really works anymore. And there's a whole new set of skills that the marketers need to pull people in through Google and pull people in through blogs and pull people in through the natural course of the way they kind of shop and learn today. All these old things aren't working as well. So my advice to modern marketing departments is assemble a whole new team. Maybe one or two members from the old school still fit, but maybe what you need to do is go find some hotshots who have a real reach out there. For example, find some kid who's blogging in his mom's basement about whatever it is in your industry and can't figure out a way to monetize his blog, hire that kid and turn him into your content creator. Find very analytical people. Marketing used to be sort of very touchy-feely, creative. It's become much more analytical. Hire somebody who's very good with creating lots of content for you, whether it's video content or that type of stuff. So hire this new, interesting mix of people and pull them together and mix them with your old school marketers and see if you can create some magic like the Grateful Dead. But marketing has changed a lot, and I think the roles in the marketing need to change a lot. And the way I sort of think about marketing, sorry, I'm rambling on a little bit, is like the horse and buggy industry 100 years ago had 16,000 businesses in it. 100 years later today, only one of those 16,000 suppliers to the horse and buggy industry is still around, a company called Timken that made the ball bearings. And I sort of think the marketing industry will look the same. It's going through this massive change, just like the car is to the horse and buggy. I think inbound marketing is to traditional sort of outbound marketing.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think building on that, I think one of the other things that was brought up in the book, in which the Grateful Dead did a very good job of as well, was experimenting. I mean, you know, you would go to a concert and you wouldn't always be able to expect a perfect concert every time, but that was fine with both the fans and the band. And so what you're talking about in the book a little bit is the need for marketers to experiment more and to be able to learn from failures. And you're even recommending that marketers shorten their planning cycles from the traditional 6 to 12 month cycle to monthly in order to maximize, you know, the ability to experiment. And with such pressure though on ROI today, I'm wondering, how do you think marketers can make this transition, and should they, and how do they obtain, you know, buy-in from leadership and clients who are thinking still traditionally?
You're asking really great questions. You're exactly right that in the book I espouse that traditional marketing schedules are 6 to 12 months planning cycles, 6 to 12 months budgeting cycles. And what I'm proposing is that marketing departments look more and more like software development departments. Software development has moved, and also manufacturing of cars and stuff like that, has moved from very long structured planning cycles to very short Japanese style, frankly, of very quick iterations to try to get stuff out. And in the software industry, there's something called agile software development, where you break your software development projects into 1 month very short increments and you do lots of experimentation and you're okay with failure, essentially. I think marketers need to move that way too. You don't have to spend, it's sort of foolish in marketing today to spend millions of dollars on some big TV ad, then you run the darn ad and the thing falls flat in its face. You know, that's sort of a foolish approach. What makes sense today is, how do we create 10 smaller videos that are sort of rougher in quality, test all 10, two of them take off to the moon, two of them do relatively well, and the rest all fail, and you call it a day. So what I think marketers need to do is shorten their planning cycles. Maybe the budget is annual, but you run your projects in monthly sprints. In the first day of the sprint, you plan out all your projects for the next 20 days of the month, and the last day of the sprint, you sort of take stock, how do we do, and you start working on best practices from that sprint that can then spill into the next. So I'm recommending sort of a sea change in the way people do it. How do you convince management of that? That's tricky to do, very tricky to do. I would convince management by handing them the inbound marketing book that I wrote, the first book I wrote, and see if you can get them indoctrinated using that book.
great points. You know, one of the most compelling chapters of the book that I enjoyed the most was the one that you were talking about the Grateful Dead's music and attracting sort of eccentric sub-segments of consumers and, you know, really giving them the freedom to sort of express themselves and enabling that. And you're suggesting even that today smart companies understand eccentricities in people and actually create a market for them. And whether in terms of skill sets or mind shifts, I'm wondering, what do you think it's going to take for marketers to do this? And how does that fit in with the traditional approach that marketers take today of building around, you know, traditional business personas for consumers? Where does an eccentric persona fit in?
excellent question. When I think about traditional marketing, like my dad's marketing, there's this gigantic wall around the enterprise or the company in between your business and the marketplace and your suppliers and whatever. And what's happened is the Facebook era, the Facebook generation, is sort of demanding that wall get ripped down and demanding a much higher level of transparency and authenticity, much deeper connection directly with the CEOs and founders and that sort of thing. And boy, is that a tricky change for companies that have been around for a long time. And so what I think marketers need to do is try to rip that wall down, try to be much more transparent with their potential customers, with their community around them, and pull them in much closer. And the best example of that is the press release. So everyone talks about the mighty press release. And if you read most press releases, they're written by almost like this press release Martian that comes down from Mars and writes in this very strange language that only, press release readers can read. And it's just extremely inauthentic language, and it sounds like everybody else's press release, and you get very proud of this language and you get very skilled in it. I think that sort of behavior is emblematic of what needs to change. If you're going to write a press release, which I'm not quite sure is still worth the effort, but if you're going to write it, you should write it in very authentic terms. You should include a video in there of your CEO talking about it. You should include a link to a blog article where people can comment and interact. That there needs to be a new way of communicating with the marketplace that's much fresher, more authentic, and that you're embracing the eccentricity of your audience and pulling them in new and interesting ways.
You know, you referenced both early today and also in the book that, you know, the Grateful Dead certainly went out of their way to enable the tapers to be able to record at will and share with their friends and, you know, express their creativity that way. And that you're recommending certainly that marketers do the same by creating lots of free, remarkable content that they can use to drive traffic and engage folks. But that's a kind of a daunting concept for marketers who believe that you're giving away the store in doing that and or giving away value. Can you talk a little bit more about the role of content marketing in the overall marketing campaigns people are doing today or should be doing?
Yeah, well, I'm a huge believer in this concept of inbound or content marketing. People call it different things. But here's the way I kind of think about it. Let's say you're a marketing manager in a mid-sized company listening on the phone today or on your computer. And you say, boy, on Monday I'm going to start a new blog, and the blog's going to be terrific, and on Monday you write your first article. That article's pretty good, and you get four or five other people to link back to your article. Those links will send you traffic. Those links will send you potential customers. Those links are also the main thing that informs Google that you wrote an important article, so that article will rank in Google. You do the same thing on Wednesday. You do the same thing on Friday. You do the same thing the following Monday. And each one of those articles, it really never goes away. It's very interesting what happens to it. It always sits in Google. Google remembers it. Those links really never go away. And they become mini magnets for potential customers. And the way that scales is just genius. Instead of throwing money month after month into Google AdWords or whatever the advertising engine you're using and kind of throwing good money after bad in there, this scales in a very nonlinear way that's a lot like the way the interest scales in your 401k account. So every company starts to need to change their mind shift from being advertising their way into people's pockets, advertising their way into their potential customers' lives, to how do we create these little mini magnets that scale over time that pull people in. They need to sort of think like a publisher, think like the New York Times, think like Fox, think like Disney. That's how a modern marketing sort of organization looks. And very similar to what the Grateful Dead did, very similar to the way kind of open source software companies, like JBoss and MySQL, these guys work. That's the new way to harness the new way, the fundamental changes and the new ways that people kind of shop and learn.
You know, the other thing that you talk about, which I found interesting in the book, was branding, because we all know marketers hold pretty tight to their branding, and the Grateful Dead did an incredible job of not only maintaining and building their brand, but sharing it and loosening it up a little bit so that they, you know, their fans, entrepreneurs can kind of take advantage of it and help grow it. And so what do you say to companies today, marketers today, when it comes to, you know, maybe loosening that control a little bit on the branding in order to really help enhance it and improve it?
Yeah, it's also an interesting topic. Branding, Jesus, it changed a lot in the last couple of years. A lot of people say to me, you know, I'm not going to buy into this Google thing and buy into social media and Twitter and all this because I'm worried about my brand. The reality is, it doesn't matter whether you want to engage with Twitter or Facebook or what's going on out there. People are going to start talking about your brand and about your industry. There's conversations that are going to happen, and you're far better off getting involved with that conversation. The reality is, for a traditional marketer, is you pour tons of dollars into your brand and trying to create your brand and trying to create this image, sort of like the guys in the show Mad Men do in people's minds. But today, it's just so much harder to do. The community decides what your brand is. People on Facebook, people on Twitter, influential users, influential customers, those are the people who are taking your brand in different directions than you ever planned. So the best you can hope to do is sort of kind of harness it because it's already out of control it's very, very hard to control. So you best let the community go and engage with them and try to sort of at least get a harness on this runaway horse.
Great point. I just want to end our conversation today and with something that Jerry was quoted as saying when he was commenting on his band's journey, which was, what a long, strange trip it's been. And I'm wondering for you, during the process of doing this book and now that's been completed, what personally surprised you during this process, and what did you take away from the experience as a marketer?
Oh, it was the funnest project I have ever worked on in my entire career. I've been a huge Grateful Dead fan and a huge marketing, I like thinking about marketing for a long time now, and to combine those two passions is just fun. And for my personal career, and I think for everyone's career, and I wrote about this in the book, if you can find something you're really passionate about, like marketing plus the Grateful Dead, you should embrace that passion and run with it. If you're stuck in some job that you're in an investment banker or you're a management consultant and you hate your job, that's, you know, 8 to 10 hours of your day every day for your whole life, more than half your life. You're much better off finding something you're really passionate about. Even if the money is worse, eventually the money will come if you really apply it, sort of like it did for the Grateful Dead and whatnot. So that's sort of a big takeaway for me. It was just a great experience for me. And I tried to share that through the last chapter in the book, actually.
Well, certainly it's a fun book, a lot of great insights for marketers, and we certainly appreciate your insights today about what marketers can learn from an iconic band like the Grateful Dead. Oh, Deadhead or not, you'll certainly enjoy this book. We've been talking to Brian Halligan. Thank you again for joining us, and thank you for listening to this edition of our AMA podcast series. I hope it's been a good learning and listening experience for you. Look for information on other upcoming podcasts by visiting our site at marketingpower.com/podcast. And for information about the book, Marketing Lessons from the Grateful Dead, and how to purchase a copy, please visit our online AMA bookstore. And until next time, I've been your host, Nancy Piccala. Thanks so much for joining us. Thanks.